Mars is an elastic planet. Things bounce, things cohere, and things snap. The date is the 8th of July, 1955. And at 9:15 a.m. in Northampton General Hospital, two babies are born. One is named Pamela Chetney and is born to a solid working-class couple. Her childhood is uneventful, but in adolescence she begins to find her direction in life. Playing with food one day, she instinctively picks up the techniques of cheese sculpture. After a number of smaller exhibitions, she hits the big time in 1991 and is acclaimed as one of the leading figures in the avant fromage movement. Her breakthrough show, Blue Skies, Red Leicester, juxtaposes images of summer skylines with lumps of cheese. The critic, Stanmore Dilmot, writes of it in The Independent.
Chetney's new show is a revelation. The temperature inside the gallery allows for a perfect equilibrium of smell, which is sharp, without being pungent. Not since Kozlevsky's best work has Red Leicester looked so charismatic, so cheeky, so intellectual.
Pamela Chetney was the second wife of Walter the Word, Toy Player, a prominent member of a bad spelling ring in the 1960s and 70s. At his trial in 1973, it emerges that he insisted his victims use just one S in necessary and that the I went before the E in receipt. Despite using the so-called Flepper defence...
I'm sorry.
...he is sentenced to 6 years in prison. The Flepper defence was named after Edgar Flepper, a Glaswegian, who was tried for number-altering in 1949. Despite a gallant career in the British Army, where he was awarded the Distinguished Hiding Cross for his excellence in camouflage, Flepper had turned to crime on being demobbed and finding that his old job no longer existed. Before the war, he had worked in the once mighty Strathclyde dust factories, which, after 1945, began to close down one by one.
These factories are silent now. The 1979 dust war marked a sad end in the long decline of the British dust industry. From its high point in 1920, when one third of the world's homes used British dust, the industry has now shrunk to a point where we import more dust than the few factories left can possibly produce. 1945. Peace was declared in Europe and a new order was being forged. Churchill's famous tea-time treaty with de Gaulle was one of the many deals that would shape our post-war future. But this particular agreement was a terrible blow to the workers and communities that had continued to produce dust in the midst of the German bombing onslaught. Desperate to ensure a rapid recovery in the French economy and convinced that dust could lead the way, the French leader won assurances at Chartwell that Britain would close 12 of its major dust factories, leaving the poorer quality but cheaper French product to monopolise the continental dust market. What Hitler couldn't do in 5 years of bombing, Churchill did over a cup of tea.
De Gaulle's aide at the Chartwell talks is André Saint-Pluquet, in peacetime a verb designer from Paris. After the publication of his masterpiece, A New Directory of IR and RE Verbs, in May 1954, Saint-Pluquet enjoys a brief period of fame and is called on to speak all over the world. On a visit to Northampton, however, in November 1955, he is involved in a car crash. Rushed to the general hospital, he is dead on arrival. The driver of the other car is named as Westcroft Loopley, maternal uncle to Pamela Chetney, and a member of the Monks of St. Thomas the Disciple. This order is dedicated to doubting the existence of any event until directly experienced. The Monks of St. Thomas flourish throughout the doubt-ridden 1970s, and by 1981 the order is able to purchase a farmhouse in Wiltshire as its British headquarters. This farmhouse was formerly occupied by Susanna Hend, the mother of modern knitting, and had barely changed since the turn of the century.
Up to the late 1860s, the women of Britain and the Empire were hampered by being forced to use knitting patterns and notations that had remained largely unchanged since medieval times. Needles were too lengthy, and rows often contained too few stitches. To right these and numerous other handicaps, the movement for knitting reform was founded by Susanna Hend and Elizabeth Biltner. They lobbied Parliament, organised mass protests, and eventually cajoled an unwilling House of Commons into passing the 1868 Great Knitting Reform Act. Her Majesty's commissioners for knitting were appointed to ensure the new procedures were adhered to and transgressions were punished severely. William Gladstone, an outspoken champion of traditional knitting, called the 1868 proposals
the finest piece of jiggery-pokery ever placed before a parliament.
Yeah, yeah.
But thanks to its provisions and those of the 1881, 1890 and 1902 Acts, British knitting was able to achieve global preeminence by the time of the Great War.
Susanna Hend was buried in the village of Gristleworth, which boasts one of the finest Tudor mansions in England. In 1990, Radio 4's popular stately home series Legacy visits the house.
And so here we are in the Great Hall of Gristleworth, and it really is a splendid sight, isn't it, Nigel?
Yes, yes, yes. But you know, Hugh, I found something very interesting here.
Oh?
Yes, now, if you look down at the base of the wall here, you'll notice something missing.
Oh, yes. There's no skirting board, is there?
That's right. You see, in the French Wars of, now you'll have to correct me on my history, 1793 to 1815.
Yes.
Well, the country needed all the wood it had for building ships, so new houses had to suffer.
I see. So Gristleworth, built in 1799, was therefore built without skirting boards. Fascinating.
Gristleworth is the location of one of Pamela Chetney's permanent installations, Cheddars of Many Nations, a panoramic view of the Crown Prince of Cheeses. Of this work, Stanmore Dilnot has less praise.
One has to wonder, has Chetney lost it? The odours do not mingle, the colours and shapes, although attractive, are neither original nor intriguing. Can be missed.
A better review from Dilnot that week heralds the publication of a new biography of Oleg Prodzhitikov, novelist and playwright, considered by many to be the quintessential Russian writer. His 1,200-page novel, Death Every Day for a Century, is described as
similar to Dostoevsky, but without the humour.
The new biography of Prodzhitikov is written by Dr. Warren Fenteng, an American social commentator. His only other work of note is a biography of Janet Flagar, the leader of the large nation of fat militants, responsible for the adage,
in the country of the blind, no one looks fat.
She shoots to fame in 1978 when she declares that thin people should be forced into exile. Her famous Rivers of Lard speech, in which she insists that thin and fat can never truly live in peace, creates uproar. At a meeting in 1981, she gives what is to be her last major speech.
No! I'm sorry, brothers and sisters! But thin people? Well, they just don't look the same as us, do they? They don't belong!
Take this, Fanny!
She's been shot!
They've shot her!
That's the one! You killed her!
You bastard!
The assassin, Stordant Welk, is a solitary, recently redundant, pull-and-straighten man from Akron, Ohio. The classic lone gunman, he is obsessed with the crime novels of Edgar Gritt, such as The Sleep of Reason Produces Mobsters and Bullet Dancer. But glaring holes appear in his testimony. By using the now discredited flepper defence at his trial,
I'm sorry.
His conviction is assured. Welk remains an enigma. And his final words as he's being led away from the dock.
Toast! Where's the toast?
Strike many people as being bizarre in the extreme.
Toast, as we know it today, first caught on in the coffee salons of Europe in the mid-18th century, when it was eaten with no topping. The global explorers of the 16th and 17th centuries have brought toast back from the Indies and South America, where it was revered as a holy food, since all four elements are involved in its creation.
Toast today comes under the auspices of UNTASA, the United Nations Toast and Sandwich Agency. In 1992, UNTASA commissions Pamela Chetney to create a special work in Paris that represents toast and cheese. She calls it To Brie or Not To Brie, and during the summer it is visited by over 10,000 Parisians and tourists. While in Paris, Pamela takes a new lover. He is Preston Jubb, a lecturer in containment theory from Queen's University, Toronto.
Mr. Jubb, can you explain what containment theory is all about?
Sure, Dan. Well, theories about containers were first proposed in the early part of this century by Einstein in Zurich, Lenzet in Paris, and Otten here in England. Mm-hmm. But it was really the work of Sir Basil Pape at the Ministry of Information during the Second World War that popularized the jargon. Phrases like containing the enemy and fighting was contained in a small area were used in news broadcasts and really sparked the public's imagination.
Yes. Mm. Now, you've got a book out, haven't you?
Oh, yes. I mean, this is all contained in my book, Of Human Containment. It's a beginner's guide to the whole theory and its history.
Preston Jubb, while a radical student in the 1960s, coined the slogan,
"If you're not part of the container, you're part of the contained."
Jubb's book describes the problems the British government faced over its controversial privatisation of pavements in 1989.
There's a new future just around the corner for Britain's streets, and you could be part of it. From the 12th of June, there'll be two new companies monitoring our walkways: National Grey Pavements, to administer grey slabs and tarmac, and BritPave, for those of all other colours. Prospectuses are out now, and you can pick up yours from your local post office or by writing to this address.
We are walking into tomorrow.
Share it with us.
But after privatisation, the state of Britain's pavements worsens rather than improves. The minister involved, Penj Takrini, faces criticism after statistics reveal that accidents rise by over 30% per year under the new system.
Ah, but you can't prove anything with statistics, you know. Privatisation has been a great success.
But how can you say that, Minister?
Asks James Naughty on The World at One.
When people don't know which authority is in charge of which pavement. For example, where pavements have grey and white slabs side by side, who's responsible for repairs? Or, if a pavement that was grey fades away to white, what happens then?
It was all dealt with in the bill. NGP and BritPave turn up and take a look at whose slabs are causing the problem, and then they make appropriate repairs to their own slabs. You can't expect them to work for each other, James. The shareholders wouldn't have it. It would be like getting the postman to read the gas meter.
Takrini survives the encounter with Naughty, and his career continues to advance. In the post-1992 election reshuffle, he is given the portfolio for renumbering Britain's motorways to bring them in line with Europe. Motorists and cartographers alike are enraged.
Well, it says here I'm on the M6472A, but there's no sign of Redditch anywhere. No, I'm very angry about this.
Takrini's successor at the pavement board is Genghis Trevelyan, a politician of Mongolian Cornish descent. He has more success in regulating the pavement bodies and is regarded by many commentators as one of the top young ministers. Trevelyan's wife, Valerie, is the owner of the Valerie Gallery in central London, which is currently playing host to Pamela Chetney's most recent exhibition, Too Gooda Be True. Trevelyan visits the exhibition on his birthday and is surprised to learn not only that he shares the date with the cheese sculptor herself, but that more significantly, both he and Pamela Chetney were born in Northampton General Hospital at 9:15 a.m. on the 8th of July, 1955.
What a strange coincidence,
he is heard to exclaim.
Elastic Planet was written by Ben Moore and featured the voices of Oliver Postgate, Miriam Margolies, Gary Waldhorn, Michael Simpkins, Dan Strauss, Kerry Shale and Alan Dedicote, with Hugh Scully and James Naughty as themselves. The producer was John Naismith.